All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is January 23rd, 2026. And it's my favorite topic, metals making new highs. Silver, $99. Man, I really wanted that 100 for the headline. I wanted it so bad today, but we didn't get there. Maybe we'll hit 100 during this very stream. And if it happens, I want to know the second it happens in the chat. I want you guys to scream it from the highest mountaintop when it hits, because a lot of us have been waiting a long time. But wait, there's more. It's not just $99 silver. Gold, $4,900 per ounce. And I just can't wait for silver to hit $100 right as gold hits $5,000, just because it's going to make the math for the gold to silver ratio that much easier. I won't even have to take my shoes off. It'd be nice and convenient if those big round numbers hit about the same time. But wait, there's more. Platinum, $2,700 an ounce. Copper, almost $13,000 a ton. Tin, nickel, palladium, adamantium, everything is up this morning. What the hell is going on in metals, guys? And what is breaking somewhere else? Because I am a very firm believer in Newtonian physics, and I think a lot of the laws of physics translate to laws of economics. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. What is breaking somewhere else that we can't see? I don't know. I'm asking you guys rhetorically. I'm sure a lot of people are going to go, oh, the banks, the COMEX. Yeah, okay. I mean, that's the easy choice. Something else has to be going wrong somewhere here. But you know what? In the meantime, I like the shiny. I'm just going to sit on my metal and just admire it. And you know, if it wants to keep going higher, that's great. Where do we stop? I don't know. And what happens when we hit 100, which seems inevitable? What happens when we hit 5,000, which seems inevitable? Do we reject these important psychological barriers and then head back down somewhere? Or do we blow right through it? And then, you know, kind of like silver at 50, once you break through 50, where the hell does it stop? I don't know. There's all kinds of people out there pretending to know where silver's going to go. And the one thing I can tell you with the utmost certainty is that they're all full of shit. Nobody knows where silver is going to go, where it's going to stop, and where it's going to settle. This market has gone wacky. All right. Precious metals are trading like freaking meme coins or meme stocks. There is no modeling this. There's no analyze. Oh, based on the chart patterns and my Bollinger Bands and my Elliott Waves and my Bundy algorithm. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. They're all full of it. All right. And I'll be the first one to just tell you, I have no idea where it's going. But hey, I like the shiny. That's going on this morning. Okay, so what else is going on? A lot of other commodity stories besides all the metals are ripping here. We've got this story about Venezuelan oil and concerns that the Chinese may not get paid back for the Belt and Road Initiative, for the billions of dollars of investments that the Chinese made in Venezuelan oil, which you know, the Chinese ain't in charge of anymore. You guys may have noticed since the whole thing with Maduro disappearing in the middle of the night. Wonder where he went. Yeah, that's going on. The Chinese have been being paid back with cargoes full of oil that abruptly stopped after Maduro was being seized. And now that I guess that's the next geopolitical crisis that we're going to read about, and somebody's probably going to tweet about or True Social about at 2 a.m., and then somebody will probably cut off rare earths because of that. And it's going to be another just wonderful geopolitical crisis coming down the tube. But at the same time, I shed no tears. You know, thanks for all the fentanyl precursors that you've been pumping into this country, killing us by the hundreds of thousands. Yeah, I got your oil cargoes right here. Good luck. Also, India's forex reserves have actually risen. This is an interesting story. It's tied to gold. It's because gold has gone up. The Indian Central Bank has bought a lot of gold over the last couple of years. But even though they have been dumping their dollars, they have been propping up the Indian rupee, which is just like one of the worst performing currencies in the world outside of, you know, like the Turkish lira, I guess. But the Indian rupee is just consistently losing value. The Indian Central Bank and their finance ministry has been selling their dollars to prop up their failing currency. But even as they've been doing that, bringing down their forex reserves, the value of their gold has been going up faster. Kind of an interesting story there. And look, I know a lot of people are going to say like, oh, India is selling their dollars and try to be like the whole BRICS narrative and the world de-dollarizing thing. I think that's the wrong interpretation of this story. India is propping up their currency in the forex market because they're desperate for dollars. because they don't have enough of them, and that's what's killing their currency. It's not really a function of de-dollarizing. It's, in my opinion, showing just how important the dollar is to their currency, because everything they buy, they pay for in dollars. I mean, they tried doing the whole paying for Russian oil with rupees thing, and if you're Russia and you accepted payment for all these rupees over the last couple of years for your oil, what are you sitting on? Rupees that are worth half what they were when you got paid for them. Also going on this morning, speaking of currency intervention, we had a yentervention last night, or at least we think there was a yentervention last night. The Japanese finance ministry is being dodgy AF about it. But right around 2:40 a.m. Eastern time, we saw a big drop in the USD-JPY chart, a big sudden strengthening of the yen, and it happened right around the level where the Japanese intervened last year. A lot of people think that was either the finance ministry or the central bank propping up the yen. That's another important one to keep an eye on, because there has been fireworks in the Japanese bond market this week, and there remains that risk of the rapid unwind of the yen carry trade, which I don't think is happening right now, but it's worth keeping an eye on. That is a big risk to the world economy. We got earnings from Intel. Intel stock is getting clobbered this morning, down double digits. They reported earnings that disappointed and a forecast that disappointed last night. They're having manufacturing problems that's causing margin compression. Yet that stock has absolutely ripped over the last 12 months or so. Intel CEO pulled off a pretty dramatic 180 with President Trump, who was on one day calling for him to be fired. And then on the next day, he's like, you know what? I like you, man. I'm going to buy a stake in your company. How did he do that? I don't know. A gold bar, or said something nice about him publicly. It seems to work. Whatever happened, Intel has been on a monster run. Some of that is giving way this morning after disappointing earnings. We've got kind of a funny story for you NVIDIA pumpers out there. It's like front page news in all the financial outlets that China has told Alibaba and other tech firms to prep NVIDIA H200 orders. At least according to people familiar with the matter, we don't know who, just a guy said a thing. And they're not saying you can order them. They're saying prep orders. And everybody's like, oh my God, my NVIDIA stock's going to go to the moon. No, it's not. We'll talk about why that story's kind of stupid and why it's basically saying nothing, as well as all the evidence to the contrary. But you know what? Some person somewhere said a thing, and it's front page news on Bloomberg and CNBC. We've got mass layoffs at Amazon. They just finished laying off some 14,000 people, and now we've got a story that there could be thousands more layoffs coming at Amazon. They say, don't worry, it has nothing to do with AI. It's about culture. And I guess that's supposed to make people feel better. Yeah, sorry, we're going to shit can you. Nothing personal. Your culture sucks. Okay, thanks, Amazon. I guess that polled very well in focus groups. Thousands of people getting cut at Amazon. Surely they won't be replaced by workers overseas, right? It's not like our tech firms would ever do that to us. We've got a pretty interesting story about Capital One Financial, one of the big banks, the biggest issuer of credit cards in the country. They're buying a fintech called Brex. Doesn't make a lot of sense on the surface. I think I know what's going on there. We'll talk about that one, but a lot of analysts scratching their heads at that Capital One takeover of Brex. That's a fintech firm. Capital One stock down a little bit on that news. And we've got a story about a Brazilian bank that failed back in November. Banco Master was one of the biggest bank failures in the history of Brazil. An interesting story going on now. They're looking at the civil service pension fund in Brazil, which bought a bunch of these like uninsured, unsecured, dog shit debt instruments from Banco Master. And of course, pension funds lost hundreds of millions of dollars off of this. Why is it always the pension funds? Why is it always where this toxic sludge gets parked? It is amazing. It never fails. Grandma's pension is just the preferred dumping ground for the toxic filth of Wall Street, or in this case, whatever the Brazilian equivalent is of Wall Street. Whatever it is, I'm sure it's cleanly paved. Why don't we move right on from there? How about we shrink my big melon of a head before I say something really stupid? And let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys. Come on back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single morning. And right now, the S&P 500 is down 19 points, 0.28% in the red this morning, a little bit lower. We've got the Dow is off by 273 points, about a half a percent in the red for the Dow. And the NASDAQ is off 90 points, about a third of a percent lower. So all three indexes in the red this morning. Stocks are not having such a good day. The dollar pretty much unchanged here at 98.32, which is interesting considering that sudden strengthening of the yen that happened last night. You would think a sudden strengthening of the yen would send the Dixie lower. And, well, we did see the Dixie drop. You see this big red candle here? That was the intervention. We'll see that elsewhere in the chart in just a few moments. All right, this is what happened in Japan. Let's talk about this one since we just talked about the Dixie. Yen gained sharply versus the dollar, highlighting a market on edge. The yen advanced sharply versus the dollar on Friday, capping a week of high volatility in Japan's financial markets. The currency gained as much as 0.7% to 157.37 shortly after Bank of Japan Governor Kazuo Ueda ended his post-policy decision press conference. The central bank did pretty much nothing at that conference. And as the weight of the trading day shifted from Asia to Europe, the yen had earlier weakened as much as 0.5% to 159.23. Now, that 159 level is kind of important. We'll get back to that. Finance Minister Satsuki Katayama declined to answer when asked if Japan had intervened in the market, keeping investors in the dark regarding the moment of yen volatility. We're always watching with a sense of urgency. And I just got the message. Wait for it. Is it true? Thank you, Postament. Nope, it's not true. We didn't hit it yet. At least I'm not seeing it. We saw 99.90. Postament, you're getting premature on me. All right, back to where we were. I saw some people talking about 100, but no, it has not happened yet. At least not on my charts. Maybe my chart is delayed by a few minutes. All right, where were we before I was so politely interrupted? Come on, come back to my chart. Here we go. Man, I'm losing my place this morning. Okay. The yen's proximity to the 160 level, which serves as a stark reminder of its slide against the greenback, has kept the market on alert in recent weeks. It is tempting to conclude that we may be in the early stages of an official intervention, said Valentin Marinov, strategist at Credit Agricole. The reaction is also showing how nervous the markets are when the JPY is trading so close to that line in the sand, and that line in the sand is 160 yen to the dollar. The government spent almost $100 billion on yen buying to prop up the currency in 2024. On each of the four occasions, the exchange rate was around 160 yen to the dollar, setting that level as a rough marker for where action might take place again. And you can see that in the chart. As soon as you approach that 160 level, these are 1 minute candles on USD JPY. The number of yen it takes to make a dollar. So if you see this chart falling, that is the yen strengthening. If you see it rising, that's the yen weakening. And at 2:42 a.m., roughly, we got this big red middle finger from the yen here. We were sitting around 159.2, dangerously close to that 160 line in the sand. And then somebody in the finance ministry or the BOJ said, enough, let's dump some dollars and buy us some yen. And that's what sent this chart down much, much lower. Now, we're already back up to 152.2. We went as low as 157.3. So this wasn't a massive intervention, but a lot of people have been calling for that. Let's change this back to daily candles so you can kind of see the yen has been weakening rather dramatically pretty much since the middle of last year, since Liberation Day, when we went as low as 139. All right, looking over at the bond market this morning, not a lot going on here. The 30-year yield, 4.843. That's down a little more than half a point. The 10-year yield is at 4.253%, up a fraction of a point. The two-year at 3.617, also up a fraction of a point. And the one-month is higher by one basis point at 3.691. Looking over at Bitcoin, we are in the red again, pretty much unchanged from yesterday. At $89,367 for Bitcoin. That's as priced on Coinbase. But all the action, once again, is on the commodities board here, guys. We still don't quite have that hundo. We don't quite have it. Let's start with gold. $4,940 for spot gold. That's up by about $4, 0.08% this morning. We hit an intraday high of $49.67. On the COMEX, February gold futures are 49.41. That's up by 28.5 bucks, or about 0.6%, after hitting an intraday high of 49.69. Looking over at my favorite of the shiny spot silver, 99.47. Good God, look at that. Can you imagine? I mean, just a couple of years ago, to imagine $99 silver, I would have been like foaming at the mouth if you told me that was a sure thing. Right now, it's up $3.27, 3.4% higher. And then March silver futures on the COMEX, 99.57. Overnight, we hit a high of 99.90, currently up $3.22, 3.34% higher. I like the shiny. Copper is up 2.25% to $5.91 on March COMEX futures. We've got an article about copper in just a moment here. Platinum. Big numbers for platinum, 2702 for April platinum futures, up 125 bucks, 4.8% higher. Palladium's along for the ride, up 4.3%. Crude oil's up too, up 2.6% at $60.91 for March WTI futures. And the Widowmaker trade continues this morning. Natural gas is higher as well, up another 30 cents or 6% higher. At $5.35 for February natural gas futures. Beware the Widowmaker trade, guys. And, well, if you haven't prepped for this storm, what are you waiting for? This is going to be a nasty one. And on the subject of that storm, guys, I wonder, what are we going to be talking about when we wake up Monday morning after this storm hits, when we spent the last few years making our power grid even more vulnerable than it already was? I wonder, what is the narrative going to become Monday morning? Because I think a lot of people are going to wake up without power. And, well, if the chatbots are still working, then somebody's going to have to answer for that. Let's just put it that way. In the meantime, I got the silver chart up here just because, man, I like to look at that silver chart. Look at this, 99.47. And again, that whole commentary, guys, about like what is breaking somewhere else. This doesn't happen to precious metals without some consequence somewhere. Somebody is, something is broken. If you know what it is, shout it out in the comments. I do not know, but man, I like to look at that chart. Same thing with gold. And guys, precious metals, look, I love stacking metals. I own some metals. I own some mining companies. I love to see this chart moving higher. I'm making a lot of money here, but it's not supposed to work like this. Gold isn't supposed to do this. Look at what gold has done since 2023. This cannot be good for the average person. It's very good for Jack, but it's probably not good for the average person. I just don't know what that is. I don't know what form that's going to take. But in the meantime, guys, 5,000 and 100 is just about to come over there, just over the horizon. But we're not there yet. I'm seeing some comments coming in about $100 silver. Guys, I'm not yet seeing it on the real-time commodities board. So be cautious about inflated spot silver numbers being used on certain websites. Let's just throw that out there. Copper nears 13,000 as Trump jabs at allies and Fed boost metals. Oh, Trump's jabs at allies and the Fed boost metals. You know, this is Bloomberg. And so, you know, if you put on your orange colored glasses and you get your TDS kicking, everything looks like a Trump story. And for sure, Trump is contributing to this, his attacks on the Fed. Yeah, that's making things worse. But you know what? The Fed is also making things worse. And jabs at allies. Nope. Nobody's out there like, oh my God, he said a thing about Greenland. I better go buy copper. Nobody ever. That being said, what President Trump is doing, his actions, and I would more focus on what he did in Venezuela. The world is being divided in half, right? You've got East and West. You've got China and the U.S. Europe kind of caught in between trying to play both sides. They won't be able to do that forever. But this story and the next one kind of feeds into this whole commodities war that is brewing between East and West. Copper climbed towards $13,000 a ton, rising along with other metals in a rally fueled by a broad investor rotation away from currencies and sovereign bonds. The industrial metal advanced as much as 1.8% on the London Metals Exchange, while nickel and tin jumped more than 3%. President Trump's shakeup of the geopolitical order and renewed attacks on the Federal Reserve are spurring a flight to safety. While that would normally mainly benefit gold and silver, the impact has recently been spilling over into base metals. That's adding further impetus to copper, which has been on a tear since the middle of last year on major mine disruptions, booming demand from electrification, and a surge in shipments to the U.S. ahead of possible tariffs. All of those things are absolutely contributing to higher copper prices here. While benchmark copper prices rose, spreads between different contracts continued to loosen on the London Metals Exchange as deliveries to warehouses in the U.S. and Asia helped ease pressure on buyers after a sharp squeeze earlier this week. So this is important here, that paragraph that they just said. Spreads loosen. That's widening. That is a sign of an illiquid market. London Metals Exchange spreads were widening deliveries from London into the U.S. and Asia. That's something we've seen in silver markets. You get these geographic dislocations in price. These big arbitrage opportunities open up and metal starts crossing borders. We saw it with silver ahead of the tariffs as silver fled from London into the U.S. Remember, oh, there was a lorry in the bullion yard. Anybody remember that story with the LME guys or the LBMA guys? Then in October, we had this big backwardation. That metal started flowing back to London from New York. Copper's doing the same thing here. Spot copper traded at a discount to the LME's three-month benchmark on Thursday in a market structure known as Contango, pointing to improving supply conditions. That was a sharp shift from Tuesday when it was more than $100 in backwardation, the opposite market pattern signaling tightness. So we had the copper market went deep into backwardation earlier this week. Metal started moving, relieved that supply stress. We're seeing this more and more with increasing frequency, varying degrees of severity, but we saw it with silver. Now we're seeing it with copper. India's Forex reserves gained by the most since March, boosted by gold. This is pretty interesting because these Forex reserves should be going lower because India has been dumping them to support their currency, but gold has been ripping so much that it's more than offset that. A rally in gold prices and a gain in the value of non-dollar assets helped India's foreign exchange reserves rise by the most in over 10 months, data from the central bank showed on Friday. India's Forex stockpile rose by $14.17 billion, the most since early March last year, to $701.4 billion in the week of January 16th. The gains come despite currency intervention by the central bank to support the rupee, which is the worst performer in Asia in the month so far. The rupee fell to a fresh record low on Friday, declining by as much as 0.4% to 91.97 per dollar. The country's holdings of long-term U.S. debt have dropped to $174 billion, down 26% from a 2023 peak, according to U.S. government data made available last week. Treasuries now account for one-third of the nation's foreign exchange assets, according to the Reserve Bank of India, compared to 40% a year prior. All right, so technically, India is dumping our debt. And I know a lot of you guys are going to be like, de-dollarization, the changing world order, like easy answer without thinking too hard. But again, why are they doing that? Why are those dollar holdings dropping? Those dollar holdings are dropping because they need those dollars to dump on the Forex market in order to prop up their own failing currency. So this is not so much a sign of dollar weakness, although it does put upward pressure on U.S. borrowing costs. It does make it harder for the U.S. Treasury to borrow and spend indefinitely when people are selling our debt. The problem over there is even worse. And look at this chart of USD INR, the number of rupees it takes to make a dollar. Even as the Indians are dumping dollars to support their currency keeps getting weaker. As this chart moves higher, that's the rupee weakening, particularly so in just these last few days. And again, you know, everybody's like, yeah, the world is de-dollarizing. The Indians are buying Russian oil and they're paying in rupees. Well, look at this chart. What do you think has happened to the value of those rupees that the Russians have been sitting on with no idea what to do with because Russia doesn't import anything from India? And so the Russians are getting their clock cleaned here by trading oil in rupees. And if they're all so eager to de-dollarize, why don't they just trade in something else? Well, they can't agree on what that something else is. It's too clumsy and clunky to just move barges full of gold back and forth between India and Russia. That's slow and expensive. And so, you know, de-dollarizing, it always sounds like a great idea. It's like that teenager that wants to move out of mom's house. Yeah, I'm a grown man. I can live on my own. It sounds great. And then you go to do it and you're like, man, this sucks. This is really hard. De-dollarizing is the same. And this chart shows it. On another commodity story and the next geopolitical fight that's brewing, U.S. control of Venezuela oil risks debt restructuring showdown with China. At some point, we're going to get a 2 a.m. True Social post about this. I just know it's coming. U.S. control of Venezuela's oil exports has ensnared barrels that had been servicing debt to China, lining up another potential showdown between the two superpowers that could further complicate the South American country's path out of default. Around a tenth of Venezuela's $150 billion foreign debt pile is estimated to be loans from China that the OPEC member was paying in oil cargoes. That is until the U.S. seized Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro earlier this month. Debt experts said that ramifications of China's claim on the cargoes and any clash with the United States could make it tougher for Venezuela to restructure its debt after a 2017 default and put at risk Beijing's cooperation in restructuring deals for other developing nations. The fact that now America is controlling all the finances into and out of the country, this seems to be unprecedented to me that we're going to have such entanglements, such opacity about the finances of a government, said Christopher Hodge, chief economist at Natixis and a former U.S. Treasury official. While Washington currently controls only oil sale proceeds, Hodge noted that these are Venezuela's main source of revenue. So yeah, other than the oil, Venezuela's economy is free to do whatever it wants. There isn't much economy outside of oil in Venezuela. So that's probably the next thing the U.S. and the Chinese will be bickering over. We all look forward to that. Also going on this morning, wait, real quick, before we get into Intel, let's check. Do we have it yet? Nope, we still don't have it. I'm seeing all kinds of posts, but we still do not have it yet. All right, let's go back to Intel. Intel tumbles after manufacturing snags, bedevil comeback. I just hate when my comebacks are bedeviled by manufacturing snags. Intel shares plunged about 13% in pre-market trading after CEO Lip-Bu Tan gave a lackluster forecast and warned that the chipmaker was struggling with manufacturing problems. First quarter projections for revenue and earnings both fell well short of Wall Street estimates, and a conference call with analysts where Tan said it would take time and resolve to turn around the company that sent shares down further. Production snags have hampered the comeback bid, a disappointment for investors who anticipated more of a boost from new products. We're on a multi-year journey, the CEO said. That doesn't exactly inspire confidence. First quarter revenue will be $11.7 billion to $12.7 billion, the company said. The midpoint of that range was below the $12.6 billion estimated by analysts. The company expects to break even in earnings per share, excluding certain items. Wall Street had projected a profit of 8 cents a share. Disappointing guidance here. In the fourth quarter, revenue fell 4.1% to $13.7 billion. Profit was 15 cents a share, excluding some items. Wait, revenue fell? Profit margins are compressing. They expect to break even. This is not a company that is turning around, at least not according to math. Analysts had estimated sales of $13.4 billion and earnings of 9 cents on average, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. Gross margin, the percentage of revenue remaining after deducting the cost of production, was 37.9% in the quarter on an adjusted basis. For the current period, that key measure of profitability will contract to 34.5%. We've got shrinking margins on top of falling revenue and break-even profits. When Intel was at the height of its powers, it regularly reported margins north of 60%. And look at Intel stock down 14% ahead of the opening bell, $46.61, off by more than $7.50, getting clobbered this morning. But hey, let's put all that in context. Look at this chart here. This is showing the move Intel has made over the last year. Guys, it's up 148%, 148.9%. Even when we factor in this butchering that it's getting this morning, it's still up 117% over the last year. All right, so a big setback for Intel, but this stock was due for a pullback. This thing had just been running like crazy. And then everybody's bloviating about this China NVIDIA story this morning. I'll be honest with you, I don't have a lot of faith in this story. China tells Alibaba and tech firms to prep NVIDIA H200 orders. All right? Didn't say you can order them. It said prep your orders. You guys want to go ahead and fill out the form? Go ahead. Oh, that's very encouraging. Apparently, that's what China's saying, according to anonymous sources. Chinese officials have told the country's largest tech firms, including Alibaba, that they can prepare orders for NVIDIA's H200 chips, suggesting Beijing is close to formally approving imports of components essential to running artificial intelligence. Regulators have recently granted in-principle approval for Alibaba, Tencent, and ByteDance to move to the next stage of preparations for purchases people familiar with the matter said. Okay, could we put a few more wishy-washy qualifiers on there? We're cautiously optimistic. Maybe someday we have a path to one day maybe having a deal. So if you want to go ahead and start like putting your name on the form, you guys are cool if you want to do that. That's very big news this morning. The companies are now cleared to discuss specifics. Oh, you guys could go ahead and talk if you want, such as the amounts they would require, the people said, asking to remain identified, of course, anonymously sourced. Beijing will encourage companies to buy a certain amount of domestic chips as condition for approval, according to the people, though no exact number has been set. Beijing's guidance to its largest tech firms runs counter to reports in recent weeks that the government was blocking H200 shipments. Last week, the Financial Times reported suppliers of parts for the chip had paused production. Representatives for NVIDIA declined to comment, while the Commerce Ministry didn't respond to a faxed request for comment. Who uses fax machines, by the way? But I digress. Alibaba, Tencent, and ByteDance representatives did not respond to requests for comment. Now, let me just tell you one other thing about why I think this story is a bunch of manure. China tells Alibaba you can go ahead and prep your orders. You guys remember the story we were talking about yesterday at the end of the stream? Alibaba is in the process of IPOing their own in-house chip production company. Why would they move forward with purchases of two-generation-old Hoppers from NVIDIA when they're currently IPOing their own chip manufacturer? This, everybody's making a big deal out of this story in the press. NVIDIA's up 1.4%. Pump my bags, pump my bags. Honestly, I think this is a non-story until we hear otherwise. NVIDIA shares $187.39. Full disclosure, I am personally short NVIDIA. Meanwhile, we got this one going on. Amazon reportedly to announce a second wave of job cuts. They just slashed 14,000 positions in October, and there's more coming. Amazon workers are bracing for another round of massive job cuts, with the company reportedly expect to announce those cuts as soon as next week. Some 14,000 corporate positions could be cut, starting possibly as soon as next Tuesday, Reuters reported, citing sources. The report says the latest cuts are part of a plan to eliminate 30,000 corporate workers. Amazon announced job cuts of 14,000 back in October, which the Mag7 tech company said were needed to help it prepare for changes from artificial intelligence. Though Andy Jassy, CEO of Amazon, told analysts during a subsequent earnings call that those cuts were more about culture and not due to AI. Yep, it's your culture. Sorry, Jack, we have to let you go. It's your shitty haircut and music that you listen to. That's why we got to fire you. It's got nothing to do with AI or replacing you with an H-1B visa or call centers in Mumbai. No, your culture just sucks, Jack. All right, I kind of like my culture, but hey, that's just me. More layoffs by the thousands from our big tech benefactors. Also going on this morning, Capital One is buying startup Brex for $5.15 billion in credit card firm's latest deal. Pay attention to that $5.1 billion number. That's important. Capital One said Thursday it was acquiring payment startup Brex for $5.15 billion, the latest splashy deal undertaken by bank CEO Richard Fairbank. The firm, which disclosed the acquisition in its fourth quarter earnings statement, said the purchase is made of 50% cash and 50% stock. Brex was previously valued at $12.3 billion. Wait a minute. Capital One is buying them for $5.1 billion, and at the end of 2023, they raised money at a $12.3 billion valuation. Capital One is buying a company that has seen its valuation cut in half in 2 years. What the hell? This is a fintech company, I guess. Fairbank said that Brex pioneered the melding of corporate cards, banking, and spend management software. They have taken the rarest of journeys for a fintech, building a vertically integrated platform from the bottom of the tech stack to the top. Still, the more than 50% decline in valuation for Brex from its 2023 level shows the headwinds that even successful fintech companies have encountered. Brex is among a class of fintech firms that rose to prominence during periods of low interest rates. It was known initially as a startup that made loans to other startups via its cards, but the company expanded beyond technology into other sectors and now services larger established firm startups like Robinhood, Zoom, and Anthropic. Also not mentioned in this article, Brex is making inroads into stable coins and credit cards, i.e. instantaneous settlement of credit card transactions in stable coins, I don't know if that's what Capital One is after here, to be honest with you. I don't know what the hell Capital One is up to, buying this company that is just absolutely a dying company. And the company CEO is even saying it here. We didn't have to pursue this acquisition. Our growth was incredibly strong, said Brex CEO Pedro Franceschi in an interview. Yeah, you did have to pursue this acquisition because your valuation had been cut in half in 2 years. Your company was dying. And the fact that you're saying we didn't need to do this acquisition is why I know you needed to do this acquisition. I don't know what's going on with this deal, to be honest with you. Maybe we'll figure it out eventually. For now, Capital One shareholders not really enjoying this announcement, down 4%, $226 off by about $9 for Capital One shares. And Brazilian police target pension fund as Banco Master probe grows. It's always the pensions. Always has to be the pensions. I'll be honest with you guys. I didn't even notice this story. Apparently, a big bank had failed in Brazil back in November. I'm sorry I missed that one. Brazil police started probing a Rio de Janeiro civil servant pension fund and its investments in Banco Master, marking the newest phase of an investigation into what could be the country's biggest bank fraud ever. Federal police on Friday served four seizure warrants over alleged irregular financial operations, exposing the fund's patrimony to elevated risk that was incompatible with its purpose, according to the statement. The Rio fund invested around 1 billion reais in financial letters issued by Banco Master, which are a kind of instrument that is not insured by the country's deposit insurance system, known as the FGC. Those operations were made between November of 2023 and July of 2024. So this Rio pension fund bought $189 million of unsecured garbage IOUs from this now failed bank. Now the cops are digging through the paperwork at the pension fund. All right, Rio's pension fund. Are you ready for this name? Fundo Único de Previdencia Social do Estado de Rio de Janeiro. That's a mouthful. Maybe want to think about shorten that up, or how about an acronym even? But for now, this pension fund, which I can't help but be reminded. You guys remember the Latin news reporter from Married with Children? Miranda Veracruz de la Hoya Cardinal. Yeah, that reminds me of that when I read that name. All right, but I digress. The pension fund didn't immediately answer phone calls and emailed requests for comment. The fund said in December it received a legal decision allowing it to keep collections from payroll loans Banco Master made to civil servants. Friday's police operation represents the latest twist in the downfall of Banco Master, which was liquidated by Brazil's central bank in November and is facing allegations of fraud in its assets. The case could be the biggest banking scam in the country's history, Finance Minister Fernando Haddad said earlier this month. The biggest financial fraud in the history of Brazil, and pension funds, civil service pension funds, are front and center. Oh boy, gotta love it. All right, we're going to do this pretty quick too, guys. We got some inflation data yesterday. PCE inflation came in at 2.8% year over year, essentially unchanged from September, up from October. Inflation's not going down. I think we all know that. It's also not rising according to this data that is highly suspect, because ever since the government shutdown ended, the data has just been really, really sus. It just does not smell right. That being said, PCE inflation certainly not trending in the right direction. Even as the Fed cuts and the Fed prints, we still have 2.8% inflation. And they tell us their goal is 2%. Keep up the bad work, Federal Reserve. You guys just doing a great job making us all poor. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to the Nacho Man, who says he's first, and you were. Nacho Man gets the cookies this morning. Thank you so much, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel, as well as Big Mouth Barry, who's been a member for 2 months. He says, why does it feel the poo is going to hit the fan? Well, the pile of poo keeps getting bigger. The fans keep blowing harder. Yeah, it's going to happen at some point. And looking at gold and silver, I mean, as nice as it is to see the shiny going, that is some S hitting some F there somewhere else. Barry, I don't know where it is. I don't know what this equal and opposite reaction is somewhere else, but it's coming. Maybe it's telegraphing the next big wave of consumer price inflation. Maybe gold is ripping ahead of that inflation. Entirely plausible. Inflation came in three distinct waves in the 1970s. It went way up. It came down. Then it went way up two more times. So maybe we're seeing that play out. I just don't know. All I know is it's worrying. It's worrying to see that chart going up so fast, so hard, even though it's making me money. And I don't mind it. I just worry about what it means for everybody else. Thank you, Barry, for supporting the channel. Uncle Fenster says, a year ago, I said I was overweight silver. I guess not. Can you really be overweight silver? Maybe we're just full-figured, full-bodied silver. Maybe we're just big-boned silver. How about a little silver positivity? You know, I mean, we're all like in the trust tree with the nest feeling good. You know, like, let's get some positivity for the stackers here, man. No, you're not overweight silver. Pile it on, man. Come on. By the way, I am very overweight silver. And, you know, this is another thing. Like, I was talking about this with Mish. Most of the positions I took in metals and metal instruments were defensive measures. I didn't trust the lack of price discovery anywhere in markets. And so I was in precious metals mostly to avoid losses, not expecting quadrupling of my purchase price. I mean, I was always hopeful that would happen. I always thought silver was undervalued. But 99 in a matter of a few months? Yikes. Yeah. Hey, here's to getting rich by accident, everybody. Thank you, Uncle Fester, for supporting the channel. Nashville Pasta Man says, JM Bullion, $100.50 winner, winner, chicken dinner. Not so fast, Pasta Man. You're getting ahead of yourself. I still have a high of $99.92. We did not hit $100. And on that subject, let's just point out, guys, be mindful of where you get your spot values from. Maybe, just maybe, the spot price on SD Bullion is reading a little bit higher than the actual spot price, because SD Bullion tends to charge a slight premium above spot. And well, if we jimmy that spot price a little bit higher while leaving our premiums unchanged, then we can charge more for silver, but make it seem like the buyer is getting a better deal if he doesn't realize we've inflated our spot prices. It's the kind of things you got to watch for, guys. Bullion dealers, there's good ones, there's bad ones. They're not your friend. Their interests are not aligned with yours. All right, be careful where you get your spot values from. Some guys have an incentive to inflate it, you know, like the people who sell gold. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel, sir. Still the elusive 100 mark. I've got Uncle Fester back again, says a year ago. Wait, did he say that again? What did I do? Did I go backwards? I did. I went backwards. Thanks again, Uncle Fester. All right, Michael Berrick Christensen says, spot is over 125 on SD Bullion. Same comment, guys. Be very careful about inflated spot values on coin dealer websites. All right, the spot price did not hit $100 yet, even if they said it. All right, the spot dealers will always take the higher of the bid or the ask or whatever. They'll figure out a way to jimmy that up by a couple of cents because they have an incentive to do that. SD Bullion is not paying $100.25 for the silver they're buying this morning. They're just telling us that's what the spot value is. Thank you, Michael, for being attentive to those details. But again, guys, be careful where you get your spots from. Nacho Man, look at a big red one this morning. Thank you so much, Nacho Man, for the generosity. I appreciate it. Look, it matches the coffee cup this morning. He said, I would buy some members with $100 silver circular Mish. All right, we are round-tripping revenue once again. We are the core weave of YouTube channels. Why not? Thank you so much, Nacho Man. I really appreciate that. And here's Mish with a big one. 50 new Melonhead members adding to the list. Thank you, Mish, for doing it. Mish and Nacho Man have this round-tripping thing going. Hey, it inflates my numbers. I'm good with it. Welcome to 50 new Melonhead members. Welcome to the Melon Patch, guys. Just a reminder, feel free to use those free super chats you get once a month, and I will read and respond to your questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, as I will now do for Spectral Multiplexing. Thanks again, Mish and Nacho. Spectral Multiplexing has been a member for a month, says, stay warm and safe this weekend, everyone. Abso-freaking-lutely, guys. Plan on going nowhere, especially you guys down south, where the infrastructure is rather doo-doo when it comes to dealing with ice. I'm looking forward to doing a whole bunch of nothing this weekend, staying warm and toasty inside the house. Have your backup plans, guys. Power grid is not any more reliable than it used to be. If anything, it has gotten worse, and there's going to be a lot of load on the grid this weekend. It's going to be rough. In particular, you guys in New England, Northern Virginia, and Texas. Be careful, guys. Everybody be safe this weekend. Thank you, Spectral Multiplexing. T.A. Chapman says, here we come, 101.06. What is this, a radio station? Melonhead Radio 101.06. WNSF. That's our channel. Guys, I'm still not showing the 100 level. 99.74 for March Comex, 99.59 for London Spot. We're still not to the hundo. I really wanted that 100 for the headline this morning. I really wanted it. Thanks again, T.A. Chapman. Wally 2494 says, China restricting their silver exports with the Peruvian miners' strike, with Mexico's increased state mining control, top three global producers, and the exponential increase in industrial demand might take COMEX to the morgue. All right, let me just talk about the industrial demand real quick. I'm not so confident in the industrial demand for silver. I am confident in silver in general, but we've got an electrical vehicle industry that is way overbuilt, and the only reason we're still building them is because the Chinese are making them at a loss and dumping them into other markets, which the Chinese government has strongly suggested they stop doing lest the executives start disappearing in the middle of the night. So I don't think the electric vehicle demand is really that safe. Also, solar cells are being manufactured at a loss and dumped into markets. Solar demand in the United States, federal subsidies have pulled back. So all the demand for solar panel silver, I'm not so confident that's going to be there. Also, all the demand for silver for data centers, a lot of people are talking about that. That bubble is going to burst any freaking day now. I don't think that's so safe. So be cautious about that, like, crazy demand for industrial silver. Every industry that is heavily reliant on silver has serious risk of demand destruction coming in the near future. That being said, all the supply side things you listed there, abso-freaking-lutely, the mines, especially the copper mines, a lot of silver comes from copper mines, not dedicated silver mines. So these higher prices we're seeing for silver will not result in significantly higher silver production because there aren't many silver mines. Most silver that comes out of the ground is found at mines looking for other things. And copper, despite higher copper prices, all these reasons that Wally is listing, the miner strikes, the nationalization of resources, the collapses in Indonesia, all things that are going to limit copper supply and limit silver supply coming out of the ground. So I can definitely get down with the supply side arguments here, Wally. The demand side, I'm a little skeptical of. One last thing to keep in mind is recycling supply. I think there's going to be a lot of recycling supply hitting the market this year because, look, the refiners are turning away 90% junk silver right now. That means the refiners are operating on 3-9 fines at capacity. They can't melt it down anymore, any faster. They're already running around the clock. All right, that means there's going to be more COMEX good delivery bars from recycled material, like small stuff like this that you sold to a coin shop, and then the coin shop sold it to the refiner. That's going to get eventually melted into COMEX good delivery bars. So that will be some new supply that hits the market this year. I don't know how big that's going to be, but it's going to be bigger than last year. So that's one to watch out for. Thank you very much, Wally, for the generosity and the discussion on silver supply and demand. T.A. Chapman is back again, says, looked at the K-shape of the S&P's consumer sentiment, and it makes me think that the rich don't have anywhere else to buy for good gains, silver. Definitely, I think really silver is a... Let's look at silver as more a monetary metal right now because, like, see also earlier discussion with Wally. I think the move we're seeing in silver is more being driven by monetary than industrial demand. Gold moved first, and gold moved hard. And I remember saying at the beginning of last year that silver has to play catch up here. And early last summer, I just started pounding the table on silver. When I saw that gold to silver ratio break above 100, I said, guys, silver's going to move here or gold is going to crash. One of those two things has to happen. And it just seemed obvious that silver would start moving higher. So I think the big move in silver is being driven more by monetary demand. It's more of a gold thing, but the silver market is much less liquid. And so the move has been more sudden and more violent in silver. And of course, if you factor in price suppression and, you know, over levered paper mechanisms failing, you end up with a short squeeze and it just goes cuckoo. So absolutely, the rich don't have anywhere else to put money for good gains. I would distill that down further and say there is a flight of capital out of sovereign debt like government bonds and into precious metals right now because of the prospects for negative real yields, i.e. interest rates that don't keep up with the rate of inflation for the foreseeable future. I think that problem's only going to get worse. And that is the big underlying factor driving gold higher. And I think gold going higher is the underlying factor driving silver even higher, even faster. Thank you, T.A. Chapman. Nostradamus silver medals for the win. Thank you, Nostradamus. Appreciate that very much. Checking in again. Still no hundo for silver. I guess we might have to wait on that one, fellas. Thank you, Nostradamus. Nostradamus, I don't know if I said that right. Burnt Branch Creek Bees. All right, that took me a while. Thanks, Bert. Burnt Branch. We're going to call him Burnt. Bert and Ernie bought Silver Eagles for $5 in 1987. Been buying ever since. Well, Bert, can I call you Bert? I'll gladly give you $6 for those Eagles. What do you say? Can we make a deal? Hey, I just throw it out there. I took a shot. $5 for Eagles. Man, some of you OG stackers, you guys have been patient. The patience of a saint. I love to see the old school stackers. You guys who are sitting on those monster piles that you bought in single digits. Been mocked your whole life. Everybody's been saying you're weird, the weird guy with his medals. Look at you now. You knew it was coming. God bless you. I love to see it. Shout out to all my OG stackers out there. I wish I was among you. I wish I was one of the guys buying in the single digits. Good God. Thanks again, Bert. M&J, thank you for 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. That was very nice of you, M&J. Thank you also for keeping things neat and tidy in the chat for us. M&J does a lot of good things for the channel. Welcome, you 20 new melon heads. Be sure and say thank you to M&J and Nacho and Mish for the new memberships. The melon patch grows this morning. Madison Hype says from WEF speeches, the Green Revolution sounds over. The Green Revolution was over before it started because some of us just knew solar panels and windmills don't actually make much power. They're just very expensive, feel-good projects that, you know, kind of like putting the right color flag in your profile. I'm helping. I'm doing something. No, you're not. You're making the problem worse. You're making the grid less secure. That being said, yeah, you don't hear a lot about the climate these days, do you? Because all the people who are pushing and bombarding you with that climate narrative for the last 5 years, now they need to burn oil, gas, coal, virgins, anything to make power for their chatbots, you know, for the climate. Boy, that narrative disappeared real fast. It'll make a comeback someday, though. It'll be back. The pendulum swings, and right now we're on the other side. Thank you very much, Madison. Silver Rebellion 999 says, shine on, you crazy stackers. Digging the Pink Floyd reference, Silver Rebellion. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Shine on, indeed. The Lunatic is on the Grass. Was that the same song? I think that was the same song. Nacho Man's back again. He says, first and last. All right, we got Nacho Man bookends today. Thank you so much, Nacho Man, for everything you do for the channel, for the generosity. I appreciate that very much. All right, guys, we didn't get our 100 yet. Maybe we'll be talking about that by the end of the day. Congratulations to all you stackers. Thank you so much for all the super chats and the support of the channel. You guys rock, as well as you magnanimous melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Today at 2 p.m. Eastern Time is our weekly get-together on Zoom. Links are down below. Should you feel so inclined, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.